Crude oil is crude. Natural gas is pure. That's why Pennzoil's base oil is made from natural gas, not crude. It gives you unbeatable engine protection. The proof is in the Pennzoil, based on Sequence 4A wear test using SAE 5W30.
We were like brave, very brave tonight. It's very hard to play against this team, man. This is NBA. We have one more game, and we deserve this win, man.
Oh, yes. On today's opening tip, the elites really did say this after hitting that ridiculous shot to beat the Rockets last night. Matt, do you get to say whatever you want after you win?
I've kind of always said whatever I want.
Win or lose. He's right about that. Right. You got that right. Wrong guy to ask that, Rage.
I think it's great.
Great call by Grant Napier on the mate, too.
I wish I had it in front of me or I'd asked our producers about it, but I believe, didn't King's Twitter after the win last night say
protest
something like protest that right? Yeah. Yes. There you go.
My compliments.
There you go. Welcome to The Jump. I am Rachel Nichols alongside, oh, look, it's 14-year NBA veteran Matt Barnes. And 16-year NBA writer Brian.
It's not quite as impressive. Not as impressive as
years.
I would say the
14 years you made it?
Yeah, I did. I'm right.
That's victory right there. That's victory.
Absolutely. Coming up, we'll talk about a guy who's building his own longer NBA career, Paul George. He had a return to Indiana that was met with a chorus of boos. Yet he says he should not be the target of Pacers fans' wrath. We will discuss that next. But first, the middle of the NBA standings are kind of a weird place. Not quite enough talent to compete for anything substantial. Not quite enough ineptitude to be one of those teams whose front offices seems to be assembling rosters by calling numbers off a bingo card. The Detroit Pistons are pretty much the definition of one of those middle teams, which is quite the place to find themselves considering how they got here. I mean, remember, it was just a little more than a decade ago that Detroit was finishing off a run of six consecutive Eastern Conference Finals appearances, a run that included an NBA title and an unparalleled fan support with historic attendance numbers. But then Joe Dumars decided that losing in the Conference Finals a bunch of times in a row wasn't good enough. So he fired Flip Saunders and traded Chauncey Billups in an effort to shake things up. And it did, just not in the direction that Dumars intended. The Pistons have not won a playoff series since, as they have been largely relegated to, the middle, which is where we find this year's team. Detroit is sitting in ninth place in the East, a game and a half out of a playoff spot. Part of the issue for the Pistons has been injuries, which in some cases has just been bad luck, and in other cases has been predictable. For example, Blake Griffin missed the first 10 games of the season with a bad hamstring, which is the kind of thing you just have to build into the equation when you trade for a guy with both his talent and his medical history. Execution has also been an issue for Detroit, though. While Andre Drummond has been extremely sharp, posting career-best numbers in, wait for it, his contract year, there have been miscues and sloppiness elsewhere. Just take the three games that the Pistons have played against Charlotte so far this season. So look at game one. Detroit coughs up a 14-point lead before Derrick Rose turns the ball over with just a second on the clock. Charlotte then takes advantage with that killer game winner from Malik Monk. All right, take a look at game two. Detroit loses by just 1 point this time, running out of time after first Rose and then Luke Kennard can't get shots off. Take a look at game three. Detroit missing two chances to tie things up on its final possession after spending the night committing 13 turnovers and missing 10 of 20 free throws. So after that game, Blake Griffin, very outspoken. Here was his quote. The difference between winning and losing is very marginal, talking about all those close losses. He says, right now, we haven't shown we're willing to do the things to win. To me, it seems like we love the victory, but we don't love the fight. So that was a week and a half ago. Now fast forward to last night when the Pistons found themselves in another close one, this time against New Orleans. Except this time, instead of faltering as the minutes ticked off the clock, the Pistons stepped on the gas, particularly Derrick Rose. Derrick scored 17 of his 21 points in the fourth quarter alone, including pulling off this in the final 10 seconds.
Derrick has 15 in the fourth. Final 10 seconds. Tie ball game in New Orleans. Derrick with the drive over Holiday. Hits it as time runs out. Derrick Rose wins the ball game for the Pistons over the Pelicans here in New Orleans.
That's just fun to watch. And afterward, Rose was feeling himself.
Excuse my English, but I'm born to do this. Like, they're serious. This is what I do. That's one of the reasons why they brought me here.
So are we going to look back on last night as a turning point in the Pistons season? It's way too early to tell, and regardless, it's hard to see this year's Pistons climbing out of, well, the middle and into the East upper echelon. And yet, there are different kinds of middles. Detroit could still figure out a way to put themselves solidly in the playoffs, maybe even pick up a scrappy playoff win or two, if they can figure out a way to get there from here. So, Matt, what is the best step for Detroit to navigate through that middle? How can they become the best versions of themselves?
I think there's no easy solution. First and foremost, I love the fact that Derrick Rose is back being the Derrick Rose we love. You know, he's one of my favorite players to watch, and he's had a lot of hardships, so it's good to see him thriving in that situation. Blake, a former teammate of mine, still has a lot left in the tank. Drummond, you know, they have quality, but they don't have the type of talent that's going to escalate them to even the middle of the pack of the Eastern Conference. So even if last night they want to call it a turning point, I really don't see them making any real noise in the Eastern Conference, unfortunately.
So, Rachel, they have an organizational mandate from the top, Tom Gores. He wants to have a competitive team. He doesn't want to do a rebuild. If you look at the moves that they have made over the last 3 years, they've all been to go forward. The Blake Griffin trade, hiring Dwayne Casey, where they paid him a lot of money to get him to come back to them. Even this offseason, signing Derrick Rose and Markieff Morris, even though those aren't major additions to the team, those are veterans designed to win now. Even though you talk to executives and they say, boy, I would look to trade Drummond. I wouldn't want to give him another contract. I would look to trade Reggie Jackson. I don't know if I would keep Blake Griffin. That's not the way they want to operate. Tom Gores has very clearly made it a number one priority to get into that playoffs. And if your owner wants in that playoffs, whether it's number seven or number eight, as an organization, you're going to try to get there regardless of all the good points that you just made.
And look, with Blake, it's a really good example of how a market that has kind of come to terms with. We are not a free agency destination, right? So if we want a superstar of Blake's quality, someone who's been in a bunch of all-star games, we have to trade for him, even if it's not the most attractive contract, even if he does have this injury history, because guys aren't going to flock to go to Detroit in the summers,
right? It's not necessarily a destination for players. And then, too, with, you know, this team being so injury-riddled, when they're fully healthy, do the pieces really fit? Can Reggie Jackson play with Derrick Rose? You know, are Blake and Drummond kind of taken away from each other, shine a little bit? So, like, to me, there's not – they have talented pieces, but we don't really know if they all fit. And I don't think when they're fully healthy that the pieces really do fit.
That bottom of the Eastern Conference playoff bracket is going to continue to be interesting. We're all been so obsessed with that top four, but there's fighting it out there for that bottom part as well, even this early in the season. Let's talk about another team kind of in that middle spot, the Indiana Pacers, and Paul George of the Clippers returning to Indiana for, now this is his third time since the trade. This is not like, oh my God, he's back for the first time, but some fans still not happy. Take a listen.
Paul George greeted with a chorus of boos. Pass inside to Zoo, and over Barrows off the window.
PG did score 36, including a season-high seven threes, as the Clippers won without Kawhi Leonard. It was also his third straight game scoring at least 31, and post-game, he had this to say about the fans' negative reaction.
You know what? Someday I'll do a tell-all and tell the leading events of how I left Indiana. And I promise you, I'm not the one to boo.
So clearly, PG feels the boo's unnecessary. The Pacers did get Oladipo and Sabonis in that trade, which happened 28 months ago. So, Brian, why are fans still booing Paul George?
Well, I think they're booing him, I'm guessing, because he went to a super team in a glamour market, which Indiana is not. And it's like they don't like the idea that this player is going away from what they have on their own team.
But he didn't go to L.A. from
I know. Indiana. I'm just making a guess as to why. I didn't interview 20,000 fans, but I feel like that's part of it. But I was way more interested in what Paul said about the real villain. Mm-hmm. So I spent this morning talking to some people in Indiana, and only Paul really knows. I guess we'll have to wait for the tell-all digital short or uninterrupted special. but the belief in Indiana is that he's referring to Larry Bird.
Okay.
Because Larry Bird, his last season in, when he came back from the broken leg, he played a little bit at the end of one season. His last full season in Indiana, they wanted him to play power forward. And they really forced him into it. They wanted to play a more modern style. He didn't want to play power forward. He openly went back and forth with the organization about it. And Larry Bird pretty much said, you're going to play power forward because that's what you're going to do. I'm the boss. And Larry Bird is not the general manager of the team anymore, the president, but he is connected to the team. Now, he used the word events, Matt. I don't know if there were other things that happened, but I'm guessing that has something to do with it.
Yeah, I mean, we never know until he actually says it, but always, you know, being a player and being behind the scenes, most of the time the media only gets what the organization puts out. And as a player, you kind of want to just go with the narrative until you get a chance to really tell your story. Hopefully we get that story on All the Smoke. Anyway, but I think the fans boo him because they know what they missed, what they lost out on. You know, Paul is one of the top 10 players in the league. We see how efficient he is, how smooth he is. When he's healthy, he's one of the better players. Last year he showed he was an MVP candidate. So they boo because they miss him. And as a player, sometimes it's hard for us to understand that in the moment. Like, you know, I gave my heart and my soul to this city, and I didn't really want to leave.
Right.
Now we're kind of getting to know, why are you booing me? But, you know, fans will be fans. They're Indiana Pacer fans. But at the same time they're booing him, they boo him because they appreciate and respect what he can do on the court.
And look, fans can boo whoever they want as long as they're respectful about it.
Right.
You know, pay a ticket. You can shout boo.
That's right.
Those are among the list of words. It's okay to yell at the fans. So it's fine. And I understand that people in that market were hurt and that it brought in a lot of feelings about, hey, we're this market in the middle of the country and whether stars want to stay or go here. I do think the fact that Oladipo was so strong for them, it's a bonus, such a good piece for them, kind of mitigate, it felt to me like it mitigated some of the hurt feelings, but maybe with Victor not back on the court playing, it kind of brings all that stuff back up to the surface. And I guess he's in an LA uniform now, even though he both was traded to and then initially re-signed with someone else. So there you go. Coming up, we'll talk about LeBron James, because he tells the story of when he realized a change in his mental approach had to happen. Some interesting insight about how it's helped him to this day. First, though, it's time for our distant replay from this date in 2005, featuring a man who's always had the answer. Oh, yes, it's our greatest living American, Allen Iverson.
You would think this is Rachel's show or something.
I'm just saying.
With all these Iversons.
Look at this. Whoa. Magic. Look at that.
He had done such a good job for so long.
Up to that point. There's only so long you can.
Thank you, Matt. Thank you. You know, I've got a defensive ally up here.
Stay in front of a superhero like Allen Iverson. Nobody can do that.
By the way, nobody came to help either. They didn't want that smoke.
Gangsta, the God universal,
ruler universal.
Fun guy, what's up, baby?
What it do, baby?
Make, miss. It's a make or miss league, baby. That's it.
What it do, Kawhi? Make miss matches. Chris Paul gets Rudy Gay. Sorry, Rudy Gobert. There's a mental flop there on a switch and gets him to bite hard on the fake before nailing the jumper. This is not the first time CP has picked on Rudy.
Because you want, as a little guy, you want to show up the big guy. Because the big guy has so many advantages on you, you can show it up. He can't get a shot off over Rudy Gobert straight up. So you got to play a little trickeration. And I respect it as a little person.
Chris is a mental giant. I think we're seeing that more than ever now.
Right.
And Rudy Gobert just happens to be one of the targets. But he's very intuitive and very on point. We saw a couple games ago where you had the untucked jersey.
Yes.
Chris is just always in the moment, and if he can play with you, he's going to play with you.
You played with him for a while. I mean, he sees everything going on, right? All the time. Missed possessions. We had an all-time, as Bob says, bubonic plague moment last night. Nobody wants the turnover. Matt, did you ever do this?
No.
Trying to get your teammate to take it?
No. But it's funny, guys, you know, at the end of the quarters won't shoot. Like, some guys are really aware of that stat,
yes,
whether it be a turnover or a missed shot. Some guys won't shoot the ball at the end of the clock. I wasn't someone that really cared, but it's definitely something that the
Rachel,
guys are
I'm going to tell you
about
this right now. If Matt Barnes gave you the ball, you kept it.
That's
you did not give him back the ball.
Well, when they do this, then it becomes like a team turnover, right? So there's like a little bit of this going on. It happened the other night, too. I mean, you know.
Hot potato.
Woo! There you go. Make trickery. Grizz Warriors. Check out this move by Ja Morant. Bum, bum, bum.
Wow.
Bum.
Got
him. Even Chris Paul thought that was sweet.
Yep. last night was the first night I watched the full game, first game back, and he's very impressive, very under control, leads the team, and does whatever they need, whether that be assists, whether that be knocking down big shots, making plays for others, or making plays for himself. Very impressive, Ja Morant.
He was pretty firmly in the lead for Rookie of the Year when he got hurt, and we'll see how
he'll be back in the lead
back here. But he was playing so well. Love seeing him back on that. All right, Miss Patience, Wolves, Suns, Jeff Teague with the Rock. Karl-Anthony Towns would really like the ball, Jeff Teague. Nope, not getting it there. Teague then drives into traffic, misses the layoff. All right, so Matt, you've been on the court for stuff like this. Is it on the guy who's asking for the ball to clean up the body language? Is it on the guy who should be passing him the ball?
That's your superstar. So if you have enough nerve to go without him and completely tell him I'm not giving you the ball, you better make that shot.
I think I'm in agreement with that. You better finish it if you're going to do that.
I'm right here. I'm right here. I'm right here. That's what Carol is saying. All right, make authority. Aaron Gordon out and running. Take a look here. Throws it down. Blows a little kiss to Brooke Lopez. Then we see Brandon Ingram pack it with the left over Andre Drummond. All right, so which was better? What you got? Gordon or Ingram?
Good question. Probably because Drummond's such a beast.
Right.
And he was in position, probably Ingram. Blake was just kind of just trying to get involved in the play. So
I got Ingram in just over the fact he's just playing so well. I think right. He's really coming into his own. He's obviously the go-to guy for that team, and I've been very impressed with his maturity and his next step, which everyone was looking for in the Lakers. It didn't happen. It's definitely happening now.
Right. If he was upset that the Lakers traded him, everyone says, when you get traded, okay, prove it.
Revenge season for him, too.
He's doing it. And I would say, to your point, like over Andre Drummond, career highs in blocks this year. Yeah. So the fact that he did it over him, again, it's a contract year. Who could have seen that? LeBron James has experienced everything there is to experience as a player. He's played on four teams. He's won three titles. And seeing all the highs and lows that come with the scrutiny of being a generational superstar. So now he's been looking newly refreshed, right? He's in year 17 in L.A. And he's partnered with the meditation app called Calm. There was an event for it last night promoting it. And he spoke to our Dave McMenamin about mental fitness.
For years, you've worked on your body. But were there any times in your life or in your career where you started to put more emphasis on the mental fitness side of things?
Yeah, I would say probably the last 8 years. And the one instance that I could think about right off top was after the loss to Dallas in the 2011 finals. I knew that the physical side wasn't going to just be enough. And also the level of scrutiny that I was dealing with and how I got out of my comfort zone, I lost the love of fun for the game, and I knew that was the mental side. To be able to be in a packed arena on the road with 20,000, 22,000 people, screaming fans, going crazy, to be able to find a moment, 2 minutes or 1 minute or whatever, 30 seconds, to be able to just to close my eyes and just kind of relax myself and calm myself. It's meditation, basically. Has worked, tremendously for me in my career.
I really like that Dave asked him about that because we've seen, right, LeBron's mental approach change since you first saw him come into the league.
Well, people have to understand. 90% of the game is mental. When you get to this level, everyone is physically gifted, obviously some more than others, but your approach is everything, and your mental toughness is everything. I got a chance to play with Kobe against him for a lot of years, then with him, and just to see his mental approach was incredible. So I think LeBron, like you said, understands that after the Dallas loss, but it's more important now than ever, and I think that is the reason why we see the team we see. You know, he took his hard knocks last year trying to kind of craft this team, and it didn't work, but a whole new team, a whole new coaching staff, and his mental approach this year, plus, you know, his revenge factor and rejuvenated desire has been the reason why the Lakers have been so successful. You know, he can pick and choose his spots. He's empowering the rest of his teammates. Everyone knows their roles. He's empowering the coaching staff as well, because in the past it's been word that he's hard to coach. Mm-hmm. He's empowering everyone, and you're seeing a beautiful product from it. It
wasn't just 2011. He had some issues in the 2010 playoffs as well. Some people in his life came to him in 2011 and suggested he get a sports psychologist or see a sports psychologist. He sort of did it on his own,
right?
Which was where he cut things out, the Zero Dark 23 right. or Zero Dark 6, whatever he was wearing back then, came about. But I actually think that he has made...
I'm going to get you to a movie theater sometime soon. Continue.
He has made a huge difference in his mental approach this season. Right. And he got into a rhythm where he knew that he had to play until June. And so he sort of would ease into seasons. And he kind of did it a little bit last year. It did not work. And then he got hurt.
Right.
This year he knew with Anthony Davis, with this team, with the Western Conference, that he couldn't start October, November on a ramp up, that he had to start fast. So the mental approach he's had to this season is, let's have March and April LeBron in November and December. And boy, has it made a massive difference. We'll see if he can keep it up. That's actually the big question to me now.
But I think at the beginning of the season, I like what you said, but I think at the beginning of the season, you saw the first two games, he was deferring to AD almost too much. So then we start talking about, has he lost a step? What's going on? And he had to show everyone. You know, to me, LeBron, his mental approach is amazing, and he always wants to feel out what he has. We know what we're going to get with LeBron. Obviously, in year 17, it's not going to be as consistent throughout the season because he has a lot of miles on his legs. But I think they figured out now that AD is showing the rest of the world what the players have known. He's just been stuck in New Orleans and no one really saw that. AD is a transcendent talent, someone that can definitely help lead this team. And if AD, like I said earlier, if AD is in the MVP conversation throughout the season, that means LeBron is doing his job and we're going to see the best LeBron come playoff time.
I mean, look, Anthony Davis was playing on a team that more often than not didn't make the playoffs, and yet he got MVP votes. He finished top 5 1 year. Two times he got Defensive Player of the Year votes and finished as a finalist. Right. So you stick him on a winning team with more elite players on the roster, you're getting a guy who's playing the way he is, and LeBron James certainly a big part of that. All right, coming up, with 5 days from NBA trade season opening, Adrian Wojnarowski is going to join us to look toward buyers and sellers from now until the trade deadline. Don't miss that. First, though, here's what The Jump recommends for today. Zach Lowe digging into the evolving strategy of trying to stop James Harden. And if midcourt traps actually work, double teams, like a large chair maybe to bring onto the court to put there to make him dribble around. I don't know.
Strap.
Something has got to work. At some point, something's got to work. Maybe not, actually. We'll see. Welcome back to The Jump. Believe it or not, there has not been an NBA trade since July 16th, the Russ CP3 trade. That is 5.5 months, which is super unusual. But one of the big reasons, roughly 40% of players change teams or sign new contracts this offseason. And there's that moratorium, guys, on how quickly a team can turn around and trade a guy who just signed a contract with them. But that period is coming to an end this weekend, December 15th. We will have 150 new players to be eligible to be dealt, which means there is no better man to talk to. We welcome in ESPN senior NBA insider Adrian Wojnarowski. Woj, always repping the Bonnies. Love the sweatshirt. Just got to say that right off the top. Once
yes,
we clear Sunday, though, are there any players we should start keeping an eye on to be traded if their teams really struggle over the next month or so?
Well, and I know we're going to talk about it later in the segment, Rachel. Kevin Love in Cleveland is certainly maybe the most notable player. But, you know, teams are watching, you know, as you study the standings and teams either get into playoff contention or fall off. Teams like San Antonio with DeMar DeRozan, LaMarcus Aldridge. You know, New Orleans is an interesting team that people are evaluating, wondering what they might do. They built a roster to, you know, kind of try to maybe be competitive to get in the playoffs this season. But could a J.J. Redick become available? A Drew Holiday? You know, those are players that lots of teams would love to make deals for, but right now aren't available. You know, remember, December 15th comes this week when, as you said, the ability to trade for, you know, almost half the league becomes available to teams. But the actual trade deadline is still just under 2 months away.
All right. Well, I'll bear down on a couple of the things you started mentioning. And Andre Iguodala has been a big topic of conversation for us for the last couple months. What is his potential trade prospects, or is there any point Memphis would just be like, great, we'll buy you out?
Well, Memphis is determined that they're going to find a trade for him between now and February 6th. And I think there's less confidence around the league that there's something that makes sense, especially among the elite teams who would love to get him on a buyout. The two LA teams, a Houston. Houston's tried any number of two-way, three-way, four-way scenarios to get Iguodala. They've had no luck. You know, that salary at $17 million makes it harder to do. But Memphis, you know, they have a great confidence that they'll be able to find a trade. They won't have to do a buyout. But I think if he's going to get to one of the two teams he's most interested in, the Clippers, the Lakers, it would almost have to be by buyout, because those two teams don't really have the ability to trade for him.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, I want to follow up, too. Are there any updates to the Kevin Love story you had just a few days ago that he's available for trade?
It's going to be interesting, guys, because, you know, Love's got $90 million, 3 years left, you know, around $30 million a year on that contract. He hasn't played great so far this season. He's been in and out of the lineup. And, you know, teams are trying to get a sense of not just taking on the money, but what would they be willing to give up for him. And Cleveland, because he has so much time left on his contract, they don't have to move him at the trade deadline. They're very open to seeing what they can get for him now. The question's going to be, how much can they command? And if there isn't, well, there'll be teams who would trade, you know, packages for him. If Cleveland doesn't feel like it can get a lot for him and that he's not playing well enough, you know, to command the kind of return they want, they can just carry this over, you know, into the draft or even into July. you know, when he'll have less money left guaranteed on that contract for other teams to take on.
Which teams in the market right now are most likely to buy?
Matt, you kind of look at the teams in that second tier of contenders, the Miamis, Philly certainly, they would love to add some shooting. Elton Brand, since he's taken over, has been really aggressive in that job. Minnesota is an interesting team to watch, as you saw earlier in the show. They've got to solidify that point guard position. Kyle Lowry, does he become available in Toronto? Where are they closer to the trade deadline in the standings? He signed that extension, so you get him under contract for next season, too. If you traded Lowry, then you free up the money, makes it easier to re-sign Fred VanVleet this summer. Mm-hmm. Or Toronto says, hey, we think we're good enough to make a run. Let's keep it together and make a run. But I think Minnesota out there, they wanted a point guard this summer. They went after D'Angelo Russell in free agency. He goes to Golden State in the sign and trade. I think they're in the market for a point guard or something that sets them up to get one in July. And Houston, they're always active. Daryl Morey is always out in the marketplace. They would still love to get another wing player. They've been trying. Gerald Green, his loss, certainly impacted that roster. But remember, they've got Eric Gordon here on his way back in Houston, and he certainly impacts that lineup without having to make a deal.
Well, you talk about teams maybe we're buying. What about sellers? Oklahoma City Thunder were a team that at the start of the season we all thought was definitely going to be a seller, but look out. They won 5 out of 6. They won in Utah last night. They're in 7th place right now. And I know that being in the middle isn't ideal for them, but in that market, making the playoffs this year, making a run at the playoffs would be valuable. Do you still think they're going to be a seller when we get towards February?
I think they are if somebody comes in and gives them a deal they can't say no to. If somebody really needs a center, with Steven Adams, if Boston came in, hypothetically with a Steven Adams, and they offer you something you feel like you got to look at. But remember, Danilo Gallinari is the free agent in this group, and you could, he's the guy potentially you lose for nothing. And if you feel like, hey, let's move Gallo, make sure we get something back for him, that's a consideration. The Chris Paul contract remains difficult to move. I don't sense that there's a market for it right now. That gets easier after the season when there's just, shorter time left on his contract. But I think there's a lot of motivation in OKC, and you said it, Brian, to get in the playoffs and to show with this group. For Billy Donovan, it would be a coup to get this team in the postseason. And I don't think Oklahoma City is in a mode where they feel like they've got to liquidate this thing immediately. They've got potentially 14, 15 first-round picks over the next decade. They're going to own the draft if they keep them, and they have a group of players that can continue to bring back more assets. Dennis Schroeder is going to be a player that potentially is going to have a lot of interest when somebody wants to add maybe a third guard to their team or maybe even as a starter.
All right, well, look, before we let you go, I know it's a little off-topic from trade deadline stuff or trade period stuff, but I got to ask you, what are you hearing about the New York Knicks, the front office, and whether Steve Mills is going to get to keep his job throughout, let's just talk about at least through the rest of this season?
Well, here's the telltale sign that Steve Mills could stick around. If Jim Dolan let him go out and do a coaching search now and hire a coach on a long-term contract, well, then that tells you he's committed to Mills, because a new GM or president is not going to come in and keep or want to have a handpicked coach from Mills. But I think right now the sense has been that they're going to at least play it out here with Mills and Scott Perry in that front office. And more Jim Dolan seems inclined to go big game hunting for an executive in this offseason. But you've seen in the past with him, he will change course. If everyone's telling him he should do one thing, he'll do another. So real-world logic does not always apply with Jim Dolan's organization.
Truer words have never been said. Adrian Wojnarowski, thank you so much. Really appreciate you being with us. Everybody out there, you can catch Woj and Lowe show. That's on Sunday night, 7 o'clock Eastern on ESPN2. Don't miss that. And don't miss our next segment, because coming up, We got the godfather of grit and grind in the building, Mr. First Team All Defense himself, Tony Allen, joining the jump. Look at this pretty new set we have. Tony looks so good in this building. Stay tuned. All right, we got a quick soundbite up here from the 2015 playoffs that will introduce our next guest. Take a look.
First team all defense. First team all defense. First team all defense.
Running back to that.
We now want to welcome in 2008 NBA champion. And yes, you heard the man right.
Three-time first-team all-defensive selection,
Tony Allen. Welcome back to the jump. You were just talking to Matt before while we were playing the clip. We all saw the first-team all-defense and the plays and sort of the basket you made. But what did you say to him when you saw yourself put through the hoop?
Oh, I had to pull hamstring.
That play is when you pulled your hamstring.
And I think I was ready to talk stuff to Steve Smith so fast. I didn't make the defensive team the previous year. That was my time to shine, and I shot it out to the world.
There you go. Well, we heard it for sure. And I want to remind fans at home, because you and Matt were actually teammates on the Grizzlies team in the 15-16 season. So I just would like you to tell some stories on Matt Barnes, please. What is it like playing with him?
Oh, Matt Barnes. Playing with Matt Barnes, one thing for sure, two for sure. Don't nobody want no smoke.
Nope.
And if I had any problems out there on the court, I was sure knew that my boy was going to be in attendance. However, just speaking on the basketball side of things, I knew he was a defensive-minded guy. I knew he thought defense first. He didn't mind guarding anybody, one through five. For the most part, he knew the terminology as far as veer back, switches, with guard to guards. If I'm beat on the baseline, he helps that. He knew to get over there. As far as those terminologies, made it real easy to play with them. And like I said, then nobody want no smoke.
A point of order.
Yes.
Nobody wanted smoke from Tony.
No, I was a good guy. Well, that's
hey, it was me, him, and Z-Lo, so nobody wanted no smoke regardless.
No. But I think that's an interesting point, though, about the way he thinks the game, because I think it's true of you, too. There's sometimes a feeling like, oh, the tough guys aren't the guys who are also cerebral about basketball. But I would say about the two of you in particular, both of your mastery of sort of seeing the plays as they develop on the floor, but to make you so good defensively.
Right. I think that, you know, kind of quarterbacks on defense. I think both him and I both were, and that was something I really looked forward to in my one season playing with him, because arguably one of the greatest defensive players ever. You know, you ask Kobe who the toughest guy guarding him was, and they say Tony Allen. You know, so you get a chance to play with him and pick his brain and see him work game in, game out, practice, preparing his body. It was just an honor to kind of sit back at times and be able to watch him and steal stuff from his game and add it to mine.
And, man, I know you're a big fan of watching Memphis right now, too.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, what are your thoughts on Ja Morant, seeing that you're out there and you're living out there? I saw a first full game of him yesterday and was very impressed. What have you thought of him thus far?
Well, one thing for sure, he's an entertainer. He's out there playing playground-style basketball in NBA sets. Right? You know, it's very exciting to watch. But for the most part, I like his tenacity, you know, his fiery for the game. I like how I went to the game just last week, and I saw he's interacting with his team. He's keeping them engaged, keeping them, you know, motivated to play throughout the game. So very show veteran signs and veteran poise. And, you know, that's good for a young guy. You could tell he's going to only get better.
They just showed you on the screen.
And I enjoyed that game. I actually left early because I saw a play down the stretch where inexperience came out. And I like to see this team just have fun, not looking for them to be and playing in June.
Wait, you got so upset at watching a play be executed poorly, you had to leave the building?
Just on the defensive side of things. I saw a play where a guy could have possibly switched, and they didn't do it, and I just saw that you know, they need more veteran guys.
I need to take a moment to be by myself.
That's how I know I still love the game, though. So, like, when you watch it that in depth.
I think one of the greatest compliments you can play to a defensive player is that when a great offensive player has to play them, they think about it days in advance. Almost like a great starting pitcher, you start to worry about it. Guys would worry about him days in advance. I watched him in playoff series. I watched him get in heads of great players. So that was always amazing. You were a Celtic. You won a title with the Celtics. You watched the Celtics this year. They are getting it done with defense. What do you think of this year's team? What you think their ceiling is?
Well, beforehand, I didn't think these guys would be this good.
I can say Jaylen Brown is looking like he should have got a little more money.
He got good money, though. Yeah, don't you worry about it.
But he's playing well. I mean, three of the guys is almost averaging a dub on the team. And, you know, you got the heart and soul of Marcus Smart. He's fighting over pick and rolls, taking charges, throwing his body out there for the team. But it seemed like a breath of fresh air for the whole locker room. You know, everybody's playing well, and it got a lot to do with Kemba, I believe.
I know you love the way Marcus Smart plays.
Yeah, that's my boy. Go Pokes,
man. Who doesn't love the way Marcus Smart plays? Do you think that they need to make a trade to beef up that center position if they really want to make a run in the East?
Yeah, they're pretty light at the center position. But I don't know who's out there willing to get a trade.
They said Steven Adams could be a suitor, possibly.
But what you would have to give up.
Right. Is Hicks, possibly.
And they've been playing well without the big name. So I would love to just see how they finish out this year, me personally. But
Absolutely.
I'm still a Celtic fan.
I like that. He's also apparently GM. He's like, well, what are you going to give up? You got the first round picks in the drawer, but you don't really have players to give up. Exactly.
Yeah.
I want to know, so give me your little pre-GM opinion. Is there a player out there who reminds you of yourself on the court? Can you scout for us and identify the next Tony Allen?
See, I would go Pat Beverly, but he stole my identity. But that's my boy. I love you, Pat. I love you, PB. But as today, I would have to go Marcus Smart. I'll go back with Marcus Smart.
Okay.
Like I was telling you about the pick and roll. I mean, sometimes you see him bust through pick and roll. Sometimes you see him fake up under and go over. He's just very crafty on the defensive end and just doing whatever it takes for the team. 50-50 balls, diving on balls, and, you know, his antics when he's talking to the ref. I just love everything about him, and it only represents trying to win on the defensive end.
And I think it's good, too, for, you know, players that Tony and I were that did the small things and always didn't get rewarded.
Right.
Now
there's
a real onus on that, and people watch out for that. And people like Marcus Smart and Patrick Beverly are being rewarded because before we were just glue guys on defense that kind of did our jobs and kind of stayed in our lanes, but we've kind of put a highlight on that now, and there's a premium for that because they stick out like sore thumbs. You know, PJ Tucker, Marcus Smart, you know, Patrick Beverly, there's a handful of guys that really get down and grind for that, and, you know, people are really watching out for that now because back when we played, it was just, okay, you know, we're defensive players, but there's so much more to it, and things we did that didn't necessarily show up on the stat sheets that people are being rewarded for now.
It's an interesting sort of domino from, like, being more of an Instagram culture or any of this other stuff. Look, that stuff you're talking about, it's not leading the news, right?
Right.
If someone's doing the sports section on the local news, they're not going to lead with that. They're going to lead with who scored the most points.
Right.
But when also available to fill in that local news segment is what's on your scrolling through on your phone or what's on your laptop or anything, you just get more wider variety of plays and that kind of stuff that you guys do, those little effort plays. They're visual, too, right? And so people will post clips. I want to know, what's the Pat Beverly story?
Oh, well, you know, you just played the clip, first team all defense.
Right.
You know, I was saying that, obviously, to try to market the voters. But for the most part, you know, PB, he took the same wave and ran with it. But I like what he's doing as well. It was just a little jokey joke. But that's my boy, though. You see him, he's in everybody's face, making the game uncomfortable for your best stars, your prolific players. And that's just what he needs to be for the clip.
For the team.
Absolutely. Well, you've got a good 3 inches on Pat Beverly. So
that's
a little bit different style of player. But I love having you in here. It's great to talk a little hoop with you, Tony. Thank you very much. Come back again soon. Coming up, we're going to be talking about Jimmy Butler, another guy who gives a little effort on the little plays there. Is he getting credit for the Heat's revival this season? That is next in our League Pass game of the night. First, though, here's our distant replay from this date. This is the second one from this date, and this one is from 96. Tony, take a look. Tell me what you think.
That's important for him.
Tony Kukoc. Oh, no. Rashad Leonard. Oh, we watching the Heat. Not for the game.
And he got fouled.
Pat's like, I'm out of here.
Thanks. Yeah.
Good night, Cleveland.
He'll take it. I'll take it.
Hell yeah.
A win is a win.
Look at that.
Yeah,
it's a December 10th game, and Pat's that excited.
That's right.
Hey, guys, the jump is going to Miami. We'll have special guests, a good show, a little music, a little food. Come hang out. It's going to be a good time. There we go. All right, also a good time, crunch time here on the jump. Another game, another win for the Bucks. Oh, yes, they continue to rack them up. They defeated the Magic last night. They have now won 15 in a row. That is the longest streak for the franchise in, I believe, more than 45 years. Will the Bucks ever lose a game?
No, they're done. They will never lose again in franchise history. They do play the Lakers next week at home. That's a big one. But you know, losing streaks like this or winning streaks like this always end when you're unexpected. So it'll be probably like a second night of a back-to-back.
Looking ahead.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. No, they look great. Like we were just talking off camera, they've done a great job. You know, obviously I thought losing Brogdon was going to be a big deal for them. You know, they've got guys that feeling. Wesley Matthews has been playing well. Giannis is being Giannis. And they're a fun team to watch.
He said he wanted to improve on his MVP season, and so far his numbers are better than they were last year when he won MVP. All right, speaking of the Bucks, they are at the top of an improved Eastern Conference this season. It's been a narrative, right, for more than a few years. The West is so much better than the East. But currently, take a look at the numbers. The East has a winning record over Western Conference teams. Are we ready to all the way say that the East has caught up to the West, Brian, or just it's not
years,
quite as bad as we thought it was?
My entire 17-year career covering the NBA, the West has been better than the East, I'm afraid to say. I think that the bottom end of the West, the middle of the bottom of the West, has not been as good as we thought.
Right.
And the middle to the bottom of the East has been successful against those teams. I think at the top, both the Lakers and Clippers, either one of them could win the championship this year. In fact, I think that the Clippers, even though they're not as good of a team as the Bucks, as good of a record as the Bucks, I think they're the championship favorite in my mind. So, and the Lakers should have the best record in the league. So, I still think the West at the top, and that's where you really count, is still pretty potent.
I completely agree. Like I said, they're impressive numbers, impressive winning streak. The East is playing well collectively as a whole, but at the end of the day, I think we all think it's going to be the Lakers and Clippers that are, and one of those two teams are putting up the trophy in June.
Well, I will say this to give back to getting the Bucks credit and credit for, say, that 15-game winning streak they're on. I've heard people be like, yeah, but they play a lot of Eastern Conference teams. Well, those Eastern Conference teams as a whole have been playing better against the West than the West against the East. So when you talk about the value.
They also just kicked the Clippers like right off the court.
Absolutely. So, again, when you're weighing wins or who's going to have an easier time going through who, just remember, the East isn't quite as bad as we thought they were. That's a tagline for advertising if I ever heard one. All right, let's get to our League Pass game of the night. The Hawks in Miami to take on the Heat. 8 o'clock Eastern. Miami's Jimmy Butler named Eastern Conference Player of the Week, and he's been the catalyst for the Heat's turnaround. So, Matt, is Butler getting enough credit for what the Heat have been doing?
I don't know if he's getting enough credit, but he definitely is the reason for the turnaround. I think holding guys accountable, setting the tone for a younger team and letting them know what it takes to win. I still think they're one piece away, so I think they'll be interesting. Probably an interesting buyer coming towards February. But I love how hard they play, and I love how well Jimmy's been playing out there and fitting in with the guys.
It's a number of things. Jimmy Butler, for sure, absolutely, has made a big addition. Tyler Hero, Kendrick Nunn, big additions. Hassan Whiteside out, major factor. Some of the other players minimized. It's a lot of different things that have come together with Jimmy at the lead.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, in terms of being a buyer, they're not going to do anything. Everybody remember that will minimize their 2021
forget about Kevin
salary.
Love. That ain't happening.
So when you think about that, but an interesting team. And again, we will be down there on Friday to take a look. Thanks to these guys. Thank you, Tony Allen. Thank you, Woj. Thanks to all of you. We'll see you tomorrow.